You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another epic episode of Ask Drone You. My name is Paul, and I am here with the one and only Mr. Vic Moss. How are you doing, Vic?
I'm doing good today.
It's good to see you.
It's good to be seen.
It's good to be seen here in Denver.
Oh, I love Denver.
So do I. I love coming up here. We've got a very special episode for you guys today. We're going to be talking about how or when or what is going to come out here soon in the pipeline from the FAA concerning flight operations over people. Now, Vic, I haven't seen too many waivers granted under 10739 or flight over humans.
I believe there are four. Might be five, but might be four. CNN has them, and our friends at FLIR have them.
Oh, that's right. We did a show on that.
The little baby.
Yeah, the company that FLIR bought pretty much for the...
For the little baby.
Yeah.
And CNN's latest one is not tethered.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, we have gotten our hands on some paperwork that essentially is showcasing what the FAA has up its sleeve when it comes to allowing you to file for a waiver for flight over people. In fact, operators seeking a waiver from 107.39 to allow operations over human beings must use a small UA that falls into one of five categories. Mm-hmm. So you've been doing some significant research into this.
Little significant research this afternoon. That's the only time I had for it.
Well, it's interesting because and we're going to go over these different five categories.
Yes.
But what's interesting that they've almost set up formulas and requirements and scenarios. So it seems like they're starting to add the framework of what someone could file a waiver under.
That's so much of the other stuff, like especially the night waiver or the daylight waiver, is almost arbitrary. I mean, there's things you have to have, but I've seen and you've seen, because we both get a lot of requests on this, that one waiver will say one thing and just fly through. Mm-hmm. And another waiver will go into more detail about the same thing and get kicked back.
It just depends on how much coffee the FAA inspector had that morning.
Exactly. And I seriously think part of it is the DOT audit, the safety audit of the waiver office. You know, they look better if they kick back more.
Yeah.
And that's me thinking maybe. I mean, I don't have any proof of that, but it just makes sense.
That's just your hunch.
That's my hunch.
Awesome. Well, I agree. And just to clarify, guys, this show is not about how to apply for a waiver for flying over people, but just what's coming in the pipeline.
If that comes out as we see it now, which it makes a lot of sense if it does.
Which this document is dated February of 2017, and it doesn't have an official national policy number. It just says 8900.xxx. I wonder if they were shooting a porn while writing this thing.
Oh.
I'm kidding. but these five categories, Vic, so let's talk about this really quick. So it seems that they will permit limited UAS operations over human beings under the following waiver and exemption criteria. Appropriate conditions and limitations associated with each category will be applied. So there's category A, B, C, and D, and E. Excuse me, I can't count. category A, the small unmanned aircraft weighing less than 0.55 pounds on takeoff, including everything that is on board or otherwise attached to the aircraft.
Right.
So what does that mean?
This.
We're going to do some real cinematography with that,
and it better be very short takes.
So if you're listening on iTunes, what Vic just pulled out was a drone essentially the size of your palm of your hand.
It's the Blade Inductrix.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's an FPV model of the Blade Inductrix.
How much does that cost on Amazon?
I'm not going to ask you. Probably about $160.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It's a fun little, but it's an indoor drone, so the FAA doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah. So Section A is pretty much irrelevant.
It is totally irrelevant, but it gives manufacturers and it also gives home-built a target.
Oh, I see.
So if they can figure out how to get a body and a camera and a gimbal and a transmitter and blades and a battery under 0.55 pounds... they're going to fall into that category.
Well, do you remember the old FPV pilot before Sean Taylor, aka Night Fury, did the class for us, which is an FPV racing class?
Uh-huh.
Do you remember John, who was also from Albuquerque, and he raced with Sean? He actually did build a drone exactly like what you just said.
Really?
Under 0.55 pounds.
Nice.
It had a small camera with a gimbal and a battery, and it flew for like 3 minutes.
But oh, wow.
It was underneath the registration requirement.
Yeah, it's the battery and the gimbal that are going to be the killer. Now, you can do a carbon fiber gimbal, definitely, but... I don't know about stability on something like that.
Oh, dude, come on. You're not flying that in anything over variable winds.
No.
Which, like today, it's about a 50-mile-an-hour wind outside.
Here in Denver today.
Which we were going to test the new unique H520, which is literally sitting off to my left here. And I'm excited to have you try that because we're going to have a couple reviews come out. It is an inspection drone, mm-hmm. but we want to give it to you to take out and get some photos with and compare it against the Phantom 4 Pro.
Exactly.
So make sure to check out the YouTube channel because that will be coming out soon. And also, if you are flying at night and you watched our nighttime waiver video, or excuse me, daytime waiver video, thanks for not correcting me. If you need an anti-collision light, we just came out with that review as well. The, what was it called?
It's the Avio Engineering. It's the Micro Max Light.
Micro Max. I
love it. I know I call it Micro Light Max all the time too, but it's the Micro Max Light, L-I-T-E, and it's a dynamite little strobe.
It really is, and it works flawlessly.
Oh, it's awesome.
So, and it doesn't, awesome. It was funny. I saw one of our members say, does it interfere with the compass? And then does it interfere with GPS? It's like, those are the same thing.
Yes, and no, it does not. It does not. Anyway. We put it up there and it did nothing to the GPS. It was awesome.
True. So check that out. But back to these categories. Category number 2, or Bravo category, a small unmanned aircraft weighing between 0.55 and 55 pounds on takeoff, including everything that is on board or otherwise attached to the aircraft, and these are the key points here, mm-hmm. will not transfer greater than 11 foot-pounds of kinetic energy to a human being upon impact, and does not contain any exposed rotating parts that could cause a casualty upon impact with a human being. So before we go into kinetic energy, because I know you've been racking your brain over these formulas.
I did have a headache this afternoon.
One thing I think is clear and to understand is that if we want to file for one of these waivers, we are going to have to essentially state that we have not prop guards.
No, guards will not cut it.
But prop cages.
Or will. Guards may cut it, actually, which is why they don't want to use guards. No.
Yeah, we'll cut you.
You'll cut you or whoever you're running
into. Are you threatening me right now?
No.
So you would need prop cages.
Cages, like the Mavic cages. And I'm assuming, I've never seen the Phantom cages, but...
They just came out with them. I'm pretty sure either Hoodman has the prototype, or I saw the prototype, someone sent it to me.
Oh, cool.
But if you guys see a lot more prop cages coming out on Amazon, you're about to know why.
Yep.
So what does it mean if we are transferring 11 foot-pounds of kinetic energy to a human being?
I don't know the technical what it means, because it's... I'm assuming it means 11 pounds of pressure of some kind or another. I didn't dive quite that deep into it, but I did some calculations to figure out which of the drones would work.
Gotcha. And that's
where not work actually is probably the right way to say that.
And that's actually where you came up with this report, the ranges of injury risk associated with impact from unmanned aircrafts from Virginia Tech.
Right, right. And they used an awful lot of, I mean, it's a 11-page report, and about 95% of it I did not understand because it's a technical report.
Yeah.
But this is the one that everybody saw, or most everybody saw, the video of the guys running the drones into the dummy sitting in the middle of a football field.
Which I have to say, I am so grateful that these guys were terrible pilots, because since they weren't good pilots, like, the force that was put onto these dummies was considerably less than what a very skilled pilot would be doing.
A skilled pilot could do a lot more damage, but then a skilled pilot's not going to be running into people like that anyway.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
So,
sure.
You know, I guess
we
could look at it either way, come to think of it.
Yeah.
But they did a kinetic drop of 5.5 meters, I believe. And they did that a number of times. They couldn't do the live flight as often because they crashed the birds.
The skill of the pilots and the ability to rebuild them.
Yeah.
Come on, Virginia Tech. I had a couple of my sisters graduated from Virginia Tech, so now I'm a little disappointed. But anyway, so what does that mean for us? If we had, let's say we had a Mavic, we were flying a Mavic Pro, and we had our prop cages, would we be able to meet the conditions of Category B?
It depends. Let me take a peek here at Category B.
Sorry, I know I'm
you
stealing your paperwork.
So again, Category B is 11 pounds, and that's with cages. correct? Yes, 11 mm-hmm. pounds with cages. And if you're over, I did my calculations at 15 miles per hour and 25 miles per hour. And the Mavic Pro at 15 miles an hour delivers 12.2 foot-pounds.
So you would not meet the
conditions. You would not meet the conditions unless you're flying. I'm going to guess just from the calculations I did, if you're flying less than 12 miles an hour.
Wow.
So, and so, you know, again, that's actually pretty quick if you're filming people. If you're filming over people, you're probably not going 12 miles an hour.
I mean, you're doing establishing shots only.
Yeah.
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 So if you're at a concert, mm-hmm. you're not going to get huge slides essentially across the people, but you could get decent cinematic stuff. I mean, yeah. you can't even move that fast with a Mavic anyway. It really can't handle those angular turns.
No, so, not in something like that.
I even unlocked mine fully, and it really has a hard time with angular turns, trust me.
Yeah.
So.
And the P4P is it's nowhere near it. I mean, no. I don't think a P4P is ever going to come close.
Capable. Well, then what's the next category? The category C, I mean, they're saying that it essentially, if we had prop cages and we didn't inflict greater than 25
pounds.
It's
25 pounds. And the reason that went up also is because of the third part and the fourth part, which is kind of interesting. But the third part is that it will only be operator to close to restricted access site. Notice is given.
Interesting.
Notice is provided on site to those not directly participating in the operation, because it's always been directly.
Yeah.
But now it's
and
not
that's always
directly.
Been, people have been always been battling with that anyway.
Exactly.
Like what is directly,
directly
or not.
Or indirectly.
Because if you're
but they,
on
no,
set.
Actually, FAA has defined directly. I mean, they don't have any questions about that.
Well, so you're talking about the next section that if you were mm-hmm. if you were filing for this waiver of 107.39, they're saying here that controlled, restricted, or access areas, UAS, that do not meet the criteria for a waiver to Part 107 as outlined in the previous section, the requirements, as you said, affirmative consent from all personnel essential to project operations, indicating that they have received a safety briefing and acknowledgement of the risk. That seems like you would have to sign something.
You would have to sign something.
You couldn't just put up a sign like they do at concerts.
Probably not.
Because where is the acknowledgement of risk?
Probably not. And if you look at number three or number C4, it says will not operate over open air assemblies of people. So in my mind, that already says no to concerts. Although it's restricted access, it's still an open air assembly. Like let's say here in Denver we have Fiddler's Green, mm-hmm. and it's a huge open air venue. And is that an open air assembly, even though it's restricted access? What does that mean?
You think concert venues may start putting nets up over the venues? I'm serious
because let's look at
Major League Baseball. I mean, you know, right. they're one of our clients. Mm-hmm. And now, since that 11-year-old yeah. was hit in the face, they have mandated that a bunch of stadiums are going to have additional fencing now.
Right.
And that really makes our job a lot harder for what we're doing for them.
Yeah,
so we're trying to get into
fences don't map real well.
You definitely have to have the right lighting in order to get
yep,
it correct.
Yep.
But it is possible.
It is.
But could you see concert venues doing that?
Probably not, because you're talking about volume here. The volume of netting used to protect behind the people sitting behind the dugouts is minuscule, considering, you know, compared to what it would take to net over.
So if we were like at Red Rocks.
Red Rocks, forget it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Free. Plus, the Red Rocks is such a beautiful area anyway. That
you wouldn't want to ruin
it.
Yeah,
why net it?
That'd
ruin it.
Okay, so essentially, if we're flying a Phantom for concerts, Section mm-hmm. C, we're not meeting the criteria.
Actually, a Phantom would, because a Phantom comes in at 23.1 foot-pounds.
At what speed?
15 miles an hour.
Ooh.
So I'm thinking if you're at 16 miles an hour, you're probably not going to come in underneath that 25.
Oh, man.
But, you know, again, it's how fast are you going to be flying at something like that?
You know, I haven't done too many concerts because I just try to stay away from them
yeah.
in general. But if we were to take, okay, let's say that we were filming a baseball game mm-hmm. and we were doing video for them. Mm-hmm. You remember that pullout shot that's mm-hmm. now part of the intros yeah. for the Joining Hacks video?
Yeah.
That was at 27 miles an hour.
Okay.
See?
But it's also speeded up.
Yeah, it is, but the flight itself was over 25
right,
miles
right,
an hour in
right.
order to actually, because you're flying such a long distance, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and we wanted to showcase essentially the city of Denver behind the stadium.
Right.
So that I actually checked the flight logs before
oh,
I came
cool.
here because I wanted to know, based off of this and what it was in here, I kind of had a basic idea. But okay, so if we're flying a Phantom mm-hmm. and we have, it meets the following operation operational limitations will be operated over a closed or restricted access site. So this is like construction.
Correct.
This is like not available normally to the public.
That would make sense. Yes.
Okay. Notice of the small UAS operation is provided to those on site, and that the small UA does not maintain sustained flight over people if required to operate outside the approved restricted area. So meaning you could fly over people to get to where you're going, but you can't sustain the flight.
Right.
That's how I understand
that,
it.
That, you know, again, FAA likes to write rules that are very interpretive. And it's to their benefit. It really is. Because mm-hmm. if they write a hard rule, then people can find a way around it. And then they might have trouble with a reckless flight. They might have trouble getting. And so it's a double-edged sword.
I mean, it definitely
works well in their favor, but it also can work well in our favor and our defense. It's like they say, you were doing X. It's like, well, X isn't spelled out.
And also, how do you prove that?
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
goes back to the Casey Neistat stuff. All right, I'm not going to go there. But before we go into sections D and E, which are the mm-hmm. other categories, we were talking for a second about the requirements that you would need in this waiver, which I said, affirmative consent, visual line of sight. And the third part is enhanced aeronautical knowledge and experience.
Yeah.
How do you define that? Drone you
to
training?
Me, oh, of course. but to me, that sounds like the FAA might be setting framework for a test.
Interesting.
So it'd be like
a practical test, you mean?
It could be practical because you're demonstrating, or it could be a written because it's knowledge.
Huh.
Read that again.
Enhanced aeronautical knowledge and experience.
Bingo. So you're going to have both parts of that. And you know what? I would welcome that. I would welcome that
a practical
for all
test?
Waivers.
Or a
for waivers.
You would Not a practical me. Test or both. A knowledge test?
Both. If you're doing a waiver, especially something like a waiver over people,
I would have to disagree with you only
okay.
because how
we do that. We
it's
do that.
Okay, right? let's say I have a job to fly, mm-hmm. and let's say I'm working at Disney.
Okay,
and Disney took down all those fishing lines that are all over Disney World that are made to take your drone out of the sky.
Your drone out.
let's say they took those down, mm-hmm. and they wanted to fly their fireworks, and I needed to get a nighttime waiver uh-huh. in class. I forget where Orlando is. I'm pretty sure it's either Charlie or Bravo.
Yeah.
So, and I needed to do that expedited. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't you think taking a test would just add more time and red tape? I mean,
it would.
Do you think it would? I guess I go back to the Sherman Act. Do you think it would inhibit commerce? Because we're borderline there right now with airspace
authorizations. Okay, let's look at trucking.
Okay.
Because you've got your CDL, basic mm-hmm. CDL.
Unless you're not operating over 12 people. I only know that because of my last
right,
company.
Right. And actually it's 15, but that's okay. 16, I believe, because I had one too. But you're going to have different categories of that. Like let's say hazmat. You have to do a hazmat training. And so, I mean, it's going to be similar. Will it cause issues for short notice flights? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But it's no more so, well, actually be a whole lot less than what they're doing now with the authorizations.
Gotcha.
So it would do, because not everybody's going to want to be doing that anyway. I think it's going to separate a class of commercial pilots, commercial operators, where not everybody's going to want to, Disney's not going to want to hire anybody off the street.
True.
They're going to say, okay, they're going to put out an RFQ or something, say, hey, this is what's going on. This is what we need. And these are what you need in place. So just like all the authorizations that everybody's applying for, including myself, mm-hmm. all, you know, our 4-state region here. People are going to apply for it beforehand. I think the smart ones will.
Gotcha.
So I don't have a problem, especially over people. Over people is the one waiver or the one section that you need a waiver for that I think has the most potential for destruction or damage or injury than any of the other ones. So I think that one should be, I wouldn't have a problem with the practical on that. 107,
cool.
Absolutely not.
Oh, you would not want
a practical
test for
107? Absolutely not.
Really?
Yeah,
why?
For the remote pilot certificate, for those of you who get mad when I call it 107.
Who cares?
I know. But
I wish it was a pilot's license, because then we wouldn't have all these issues with ICAO.
There you go. But because it's meant to learn. Because then you're going to have a 107. Oh, we're getting off track here, aren't we? But then you have to have a 107 learner's permit. And so it's like, so that's a whole other step. So no, I don't want a practical for 107. I think a knowledge test for 107, especially with the birds we fly. I fly.
I don't know. I guess I would like to see a practical test, but let's get back.
A lot of people would. A lot of people would.
All right. So anyway, back to the requirements. Mm-hmm. They're also saying that you would have limited exposure to personnel, only essential to project operations, and restricted access area under constant observation by safety personnel. So it sounds like VO is required there.
It should be anyway by a responsible pilot. But yeah, I think the FAA is going to require a VO, and depending on the venue, maybe multiple VOs.
Like the stadiums?
Yeah, like the stadiums.
I was running around Sloan Park, literally, like a chicken with my head cut off, just trying to follow the drone as a student's orbit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was running. I probably lost 2 pounds that day. So, in 107 degree heat. So.
That'll help you get into your tux at the wedding.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. They say examples where exemptions may apply is closed set motion picture and television filming. So, we know in November of 2016, they got rid of all the MPTOMs.
Right. And a lot of people don't understand that.
Including FISDO. I had to explain that to someone recently. So I'm not going to say
it's not like it's anybody's fault. They didn't like tell everybody. They just kind of did away with them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it also helped me kind of say, hey, New Mexico Film, you're hiring illegal pilots because they say they're 333 and they're not 107. And oh, wait, MPTOMs don't exist anymore. So, yeah, that was fun. Anyway, they also say sports or live entertainment events where the public is already restricted from operational areas. Mm-hmm. So this would kind of apply to something that I used to film, don't film anymore, but like World Series of Surfing. Mm-hmm. So that would be where, you know, you have areas restricted to the public. The public isn't running out into the ocean.
Right.
You know?
Right, around the lake. That's just a safety issue anyway because of the boats.
True. So let's go back for a second. We're going to go back to section 4, where these are the different categories that they would permit the waiver to go down or be allowed. Excuse me, I'm using street language here. Anyway, small unmanned aircraft that exceed the weight or impact kinetic energy thresholds of categories 1 through 3 above, but incorporate active safety features such as deployable parachute or airbag system that reduce the amount of impact kinetic energy transferred to a person upon impact to an acceptable level. I think this is why InterDrone, there were guys saying we can get you your flying over people authorization or waiver. They were actually advertising that.
Interesting.
And I was like,
those are manufacturers?
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
they probably had a little bit of pre-knowledge.
Yes
on this.
And no. Yeah, you agreed. But yes and no. Some were and some weren't. But it was like, that's why I didn't interview them at InterDrone, because I was like, there's no way you guys can promise that. Like, that is completely a bold flat lie.
Interesting to try and promise that, I think. But you know, hey, marketing, you know, if they America, do it, awesome.
Cheeseburgers make you healthy too. So
I'm gonna eat.
Eat all the wheat in the world and you'll be fine anyway. So they also say that the design and performance of the safety features must be found acceptable to the administrator. So this goes back to certification of drones. This goes back to certification of these parts too. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be, well, I'm really hoping the manufacturers, DJI, Unique, whoever else comes up the pipe, Lily. Sorry, I had to throw that up.
What a joke. Did you see that Lily was talking at some drone conference this week?
They have one out now, at least in prototype.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Anyway.
Poor America.
Yeah, although somebody just bought the name. It's not the Lily manufacturer. At least that's what I've heard. But anyway, back to this. We're getting off subject again. If you guys listen to this podcast, you understand it happens a lot anyway. So.
Yeah, well, we don't have too much time or else the fiance is going to get pissed at me.
So, I'm hoping that the manufacturers of both the drones and the safety equipment will self-certify, or at least perform the certifications. And especially for the kinetic energy side of things, they can say, okay, this is our drone, this particular drone at this many miles an hour, or this meters per second, because everything's that way, will only exert this much kinetic energy. And so otherwise, if we're going to fill one of these out ourselves, we're going to have to perform all these tests, and we're going to have to verify all these tests. And it's going to be cost prohibitive because we're going to have to hire engineers to run the test for us. Because otherwise we can't just, do you have equipment at home to figure out kinetic energy of a drone at 37
no,
miles an
but
hour?
What okay. I do have is the New Mexico Small Business Association, where I can get $100,000 of research and testing from Los Alamos National Labs.
Well, there we go.
But that
the
would be my ace in the hole.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I think the proof is in the pudding. If you look at section 5, the small UAS, by the way, I think it's hilarious that they go from UA to UAS, UA to UAS. The small UAS having a type certificate that does not prohibit operations over human beings.
Oh, Part E.
Part E.
Yeah, okay.
They're going, I mean, there's the proof in the pudding right there. The aircraft certification's coming out.
I think so. And that's when I read that, it's like, okay, so if I'm thinking this in Section 3 and 4 of C and D, then they say this in Section E, maybe they are going to require it, or at least suggest. I mean, I guess they really can't require DJI to do this. I mean, DJI would be smart if they did, and Unique and whoever
maybe
else.
Maybe that's what also that policy meeting is going over in D.C. that I'm going to.
Oh, who knows?
What
that's a, that, I don't know. I don't know what that is. That'll be interesting.
That will be interesting. But anyway, so if we continue on exemptions to Part 91 or under 323 or exemptions to 107.39 Section B, general public safety, they say UAS that do not meet the criteria for a waiver to Part 107 as outlined in the previous section, but the public safety benefits of the requested operations will outweigh the public safety of the risks in the event of an emergency.
Right. What,
how do you interpret that?
I interpret that they can, that let's say an SAR group, public or private, nonprofit, whatever, goes to a Florida situation or goes to a Texas situation where you've got those kind of flooding, they can fly over people with impunity.
Gotcha.
Because the
so if they're
the,
delivering blood, if they're delivering
blood,
for people,
looking for people, whatever medicine, safety lines,
yeah,
rescue
and
lines.
And we know that people were requesting to fly blood and medicine mm-hmm. to locations that were known to have like sensitive.
Medicine was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they
absolutely.
Didn't allow it.
Yeah. Because you know, what are you going to do? Toss it to them? I mean, you have to be over somebody to rescue them, or you have to be over somebody to drop medical supplies. And so in a situation where the risk is so small compared to the benefit of what you're trying to do, yeah, this I think it's awesome. The FAA is saying that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Go for it. Save a life.
So the requirements to have this happen is that they would obtain an authorization from the incident commander.
And that's huge.
Where applicable.
Because all you got to do is come up to the incident commander and say, hey, can I fly over that guy to go help him? And all he's got to do is say yes.
Sounds like we need to extend legal flyer.
13-second authorization.
Legal flyer needs a new contract.
No, that's actually not a bad idea.
Yeah, no, I should reach
out. Or at least
out.
A paperwork or
yeah.
something.
Yeah. And then they're saying the second requirement does not interfere with other emergency response efforts.
That should be a given.
Yeah, because
that
you're supposed to yield to manned aircraft anyway.
Or
especially
anybody on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you're flying, if they're trying to throw a rope to somebody who's 20 yards and away, like trapped in a tree in a river that's overflowed its banks, they're going to try and throw a buoy to them. And there's probably some guys out there, if there's no wind,
we
that
had
can do that,
that. We had that mission at the flying.
Exactly. And if you just show up and start trying to drop it instead, and it's like, nah, dude, come on.
Yeah.
You know, be smart about it.
Yeah.
Just because you've got all this doesn't give you carte blanche.
Yeah, no, I think this is good. So they're saying examples where these exemptions may apply. Operations supporting natural disaster recovery. So mm-hmm. you were right on the money. Operations supporting search and rescue efforts or loss of missing persons victims of a natural disaster. Operations to assess the extent of the environmental hazard or immediate impact on human life. Puerto Rico. Operations supporting police, fire, or national security missions. Yep. Interesting.
I think it's interesting they put national security missions in there, because if it's a national security issue, FAA kind of steps back anyway.
Well, I wonder if it was because, you know, one of the big issues, who was the guy, I forget what his name was. He recently wrote for, I think it was the Chicago Tribune, and he was saying that, long story short, there's a big problem with terrorists using drones to deliver munitions. And there's a much bigger problem than that,
yeah.
which I'm glad that this guy wasn't very smart to mention it. But, you know, I think that this directly applies, because if they're using one of those interceptor drones, mm-hmm. Essentially the Anthony Cool's kamikaze drone idea, you remember that?
I sort of remember that, yeah.
You know, I think that's where this would apply, where it's essentially, it comes into, but the public safety benefits of the requested operations will outweigh the public safety risks.
Absolutely. So. And it should. I mean, that should be the standard, kind of thing that goes on when you're trying to apply for any kind of exemption for anything. It's like, what is the risk? What is the reward? And which benefits better, or which is greater?
Yeah.
The greater, is the reward greater than the risk by a factor of X, whatever
and
that
what
is.
What does that look like?
And
yeah.
what does that look like? And it's like, that should be a standard thing. I mean,
yeah.
it really should.
Agreed. Well, I think this is really, this is great information, Vic. Thank you so much
Absolutely.
For looking into this.
Absolutely.
I mean, so we know this is coming.
Mm-hmm.
We know aircraft certifications are coming.
More than likely.
We know
yeah.
that they're also working on the recency exam, because it doesn't exist yet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to guess, when do you think all this comes out of the pipe? I mean, do you think this show will
wow.
push it along further?
I'd like to think so, but no, probably not. I mean, yeah, I don't think so.
Unless people call their local FAA office or give Heather Hemdahl a call.
Sorry, Heather.
Sorry, not sorry.
I think that since it's kind of getting out, because we're not the only ones who have seen this.
Mm-hmm. And the people who are seeing this are, how would you say, public safety oriented?
I think that's, yeah.
I think that's fair to say.
I think that's very fair to say. The public safety factor, the public safety people. And I think the FAA is letting them see this to help them move it, move that sector along.
You think they're trying to help people get prepared for this?
I think so. I think so. And kudos to the FAA if they are. So I really think they are.
Should people go out and purchase parachutes for their Phantoms?
No.
Because they're not certified.
They're not certified yet. And we, and why? I mean, right now.
Because they're fun and you want to test it. I want to do a motor fail safe and see how it works.
Well, I wish I'd have had one on my Inspire CSC a few weeks ago. But
truth comes out.
Yeah, it does. Boom. I don't think so yet. And I don't think it's, boy, I've every time I try and guess something in the FAA, I'm wrong. But I'll try. I think we're looking probably after the first of the year as a release, because if you look at the first dates on this, it actually has as X/XX/17 effective date.
So before the end of the year.
So before the end of the year, but that's because they have to put something there. Does that mean it comes out by the end of the year? I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too.
I hope so. And if it does, that's great, because then this will give the industry. I think it'll give the industry a boost, especially the first responders.
Yeah.
Because so many of them are kind of afraid of this right now.
I don't blame them.
Yeah.
I don't blame them.
Yeah. And I think this is going to be really great for
that. We're starting our recording of all the public safety classes. So we've done in-person trainings for firefighters and police officers, but now we're starting a 30-class series where we literally go over every single potential use and the national standards and how to meet those and meet the requirements of National Fire Protection Agency, whatever it's called. And that's starting at the end of this month. But people are trying to get their hands on these things. And I mean, this is a big issue, especially for, like, you know, they said an inner drone that the Nevada Highway Patrol was using drones for crime scene mapping.
Oh, cool.
But then if you actually watch the videos, they say, well, we could use this in the future.
Oh.
So I think this actually would have a direct application to
absolutely.
Crime scene. I mean, like, let's say crime scene mapping, let's say accident mapping. Mm-hmm. If you're mapping an accident, you're going to have to get oblique shots. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to get orbits, mm-hmm. which means you're probably going to have to fly over the other side of the highway where there is what?
Right.
Moving traffic. Yes.
And what's in the traffic?
People.
So that would go right back to this again. Although still, if you have one of these, don't fly over moving traffic yet.
Yeah. Find your center point, play Frogger.
And then, there you go. Been there, done that.
Anyway. Well, is there anything that you,
want
to say before
we say a couple things here?
Yeah, go ahead.
First of all, in my investigation, in my using that old physics math from George Mason thousands of years ago when I got it, you know what current drone on the market falls under the first category?
What?
The Spark.
Yeah, but would you really use a Spark for filming? Like,
if that's your only choice, I've seen some people do some pretty fun things with a Spark.
Fun things.
And good things.
What about practical things?
In this case, very. Because you can fly it over people.
Every time you roll the gimbal, the horizon line rolls.
I know. It's that, like I said. If you're pointing down, though, let's talk about a concert venue. You're pointing down. First of all, it's concerts.
Who's gonna
care?
You could do like upper tilting reveals
there
if you're
go.
Just moving straight.
There you go.
No roll.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
And you'd have to have prop cages.
It's pretty interesting. Yeah, you'd have to have prop cages for it.
I've got a Spark in the car. I've flown it about 3 times.
I don't want one.
I might give mine away to someone.
I said that about my Mavic too, that I never wanted one.
No, the Mavic Pro is...
I like it.
...is killer. They released the Mavic Pro Platinum.
Platinum.
Uh-huh.
I'll get the blades.
It's only a 3 decibel difference.
Yeah,
and if you have the unique Typhoon H 520, I'm just taking what we call a WAG, wild ass guess, but I think it's about half the sound of the Phantom.
Really? Well, we'll find out tomorrow.
Definitely.
I'll find out tomorrow.
I'm excited. Don't forget to take those cameras with you. So,
oh yeah, definitely.
Well, guys, I think that's going to do it for us today. I really appreciate you guys listening in. If you have any questions, don't be afraid to ask them at askdroneu.com. Very important. Also, I want to say thank you to the person who helped us acquire this.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir, or ma'am. Yeah. Who is it? You won't know ever. Anyway,
no.
Thank you very much. And also thank you to the team of Virginia Tech for being crappy pilots, because you helped take the kinetic energy level down.
Let's use the word inexperienced pilots.
Lackadaisical, laissez-faire.
But they did good work.
They did.
Let's
yeah,
give
thank
them,
you.
Let's
okay.
give them. I was going to say, let's give
as
them props,
a,
but that's, they wrecked all the props.
As a family member to Virginia Tech alumni, thank you, Virginia yes. Tech, for at least doing this.
Yes, and it was awesome you guys to put theory into action.
Yes.
Because we have theory out the wazoo.
We sure do.
We need action.
And we also learned from this report, which we didn't talk about, that if, essentially if you're flying a Phantom or an Inspire, the biomechanical summary of falling impact tests, you have a relatively low chance of hurting someone if you're flying a Phantom or an Inspire. But as soon as you move up to an S1000,
why did they even test the
S1?
All you got to do is look at it and say, don't fly over people. Just got to look at it and say that. I mean, criminy.
Oh, man. Jeepers Creepers 3 is going to come out soon.
There you go. Anyway. Yeah, but the Phantom 3, and well, they tested the 3. But the Phantom 4 is just a few grams more. I
yeah.
think it's another 250 grams. Something like that.
Not, it's not,
not a lot.
Extremely significant.
Not a lot.
Anyway.
But the Phantom 3 and the Inspire 1 were for injury risk for the head.
Inspire 2, though, I feel like it's a bigger vehicle, mm-hmm. bigger props, bigger motors,
well, this is an Inspire
heavier.
One. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't fly an Inspire over people anyway. That's just me.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I've
risk
never
reward.
Seen prop cages either for that. So.
No. Well, if they'll come out with them.
True, true.
Out of that
well,
the parachute.
Yeah, totally. Well, anyway, guys, that is going to do it for us. Vic, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
Definitely. And if you haven't checked out Vic's new courses that are coming out, well, I wouldn't call them new courses, but we did some YouTube videos that had so much detail, we're deciding not to release them on
YouTube.
Oh, really?
YouTube. Yeah.
So there will be some new classes under
so
the
photography.
Yeah, under the photography section from Vic, who is stellar. And the light painting class is now in editing. So
I'm so excited for that to come out.
I am
that was
too.
Such a blast to shoot.
It really was. It really
Bloom
was.
Cube loved that photograph.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. Anyway, guys, that's going to do it for us today. My name is Paul, and you're watching Ask Drone U.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.